Quit laughing.
I'm trying. Okay. Okay, go.
All right, 3, 2. I'm going to try this without reading the script. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer. I'm failing.
No, it's going well. It's really strong. Keep moving.
I feel like I'm not approaching this with confidence. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer, culinary guide, and cookbook author.
And I'm Danielle Caligari, a lecturer at the University of California with a PhD in Italian studies, and I'm also a certified specialist of wine.
Hi,
Katie. You are about to embark on a series of exciting American adventures, and I am so delighted that we managed to squeeze in a recording because I feel blessed that you would make the time.
I feel blessed by your presence, generally speaking. And it's true, there's a lot happening, but I'm excited always to record a podcast of Gola. I've got some stuff going down. I've got a pizza party happy hour at Stanzione 87 in Miami tomorrow night / tonight, if you're listening to this on Friday, February 22nd.
And not while we're recording
/
it.
In the past.
And you're not in my house.
And then that is a sort of like food of the Italian South cookbook kickoff event. The book's not out yet. Comes out March 12th, but it's a little preview of the book. There'll be wine, there'll be pizza, snacks. I've got a copy of the book. If you wash your hands before touching, I'll let you look at it. It's like I've got one freaking copy, so I don't want to get any more messed up than I've already made it. And then March 12th, I go on this like insane book tour that I'm super excited about, which will include stops in Rochester, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, Detroit, Chicago, Denver, Boulder, Oakland, and San Francisco, and then 100 more cities.
Yeah.
So maybe we do like a live podcast or some sort of podcast Gola thing at the end of March when I'm in your neck of the woods.
I know, I'm psyched for it, and I have cleared my calendar and my desk in a cartoonish style of one arm swooping across the desk as soon as I knew you were going to be here. I'm looking forward to hearing about how all these events went and to attending hopefully even more than one, but certainly if nothing else, when you are in my neck of the woods. But I know that the tour goes on and on, not just to other American cities, but also to Italy this summer, where hopefully we'll be able to manage to be in the same place once more. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot of great stuff on deck in general. And for that reason, we are here today to talk about the darkest thing we could come up with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which...
it's not a light topic.
No, and I'm not sure exactly how it sort of popped into both of our minds as we were gearing up for a very full spring slate. But I was actually watching an episode of, and Katie, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this show. I believe it's pronounced The Sopranos. Is that right? Or
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's the story of a family living in a state you may be familiar with.
Nueva Jersey.
Right, that's it, yes. I have been returning to it lately because I was doing a little bit of work on organized crime and food in an earlier moment, historically, as always, of course. I hate to get anybody excited into thinking that I might be working on the 21st century in any particular fashion. But I was surprised to see so many things come up and connect to the broader topics that you and I have often broached in perhaps more positive lights, but always, I think, reminding people of this kind of darker underbelly of things.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So in case you haven't drawn your own conclusions, today's episode is about the mafia, or more accurately, the mafias.
Yes. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like when I think about The Sopranos, which I currently am rewatching, even though I do not need to be dedicating 87 hours of my life to anything but writing, Yes. Doesn't stop me from binging Sopranos. So yeah, like I love how like a New Jersey based organized crime syndicate has a lot in common with things that I observe every day. And one thing that sort of comes to mind in my Roman life is how frequently food businesses are used as money laundering operations or fronts for the various mafias that operate in Rome.
Yeah. So this is actually already getting, breaking out into a sweat, thinking about how much territory we have to cover here. So let's preface this by saying this is no doubt the first of many episodes that talks about this subject in more or less detail, because organized crime writ large and the mafias, plural, as you say, are part and parcel of understanding how food works. And that's on all levels, from the production and agricultural levels to distribution to retail to marketing and branding and a sort of more abstract scale, to the point where there's almost really no way that you can get into talking about food, especially in Italy, but definitely also beyond, to be clear, without acknowledging the presence of this super legal market and syndicate that functions around it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we can definitely devote numerous episodes to the idea of mafia. You know, in its sort of the easiest to sort of conceive incarnations are as like families or as groups like the Camorra in Campania or the 'Ndrangheta in Calabria. But, you know, sort of generally speaking, there is a mafia mentality that pervades not just Italian culture, but many cultures. The idea of extortion for protection, of siphoning funds from public subsidies in order to create new business opportunities for people who haven't gotten those opportunities through merit. There is this like really oppressive and super pervasive presence of mafia in its various forms.
Yes, absolutely. And as you've pointed out, there are the big names that some people may have heard of, including Camorra, 'Ndrangheta, probably more than those even, Cosa Nostra, which is the Sicilian branch of mafia that also penetrated the United States for a long, or remains present to some extent, although in a weaker form than it once was. But there are also these smaller local units that we can track, and then even larger scale ones where we have also kind of gray areas between where the mafia and legitimate business, especially at the scale of, for example, international real estate speculation, work together. So it can be a little bit hard to wrap your mind around, even in a basic way. But it might be useful for us to talk a little bit about the deeper history, just to explain what it means and why mafia and food are so closely intertwined, because many people have suggested over the last several years, in particular, this has become an increasingly popular hypothesis, that the first and the strongest iteration of the mafia as we know it today in Italy was born of a food market, right?
Yes.
So this is something that some people may have read about, because it kind of made a splash in the kind of general media. There was a Washington Post article, I remember. There were a handful of other places where people talked about it. But it's something that's been in academic literature for a while, which is that sometime in the mid to late 19th century, as the cost of citrus exploded across the world, and partly in response to the realization that it cured scurvy, partly in response to the ability to move food more quickly and have delicious fresh citrus arrive in good shape to places where it didn't grow, people began to expect to have more of it and to be willing to pay more for it. And so the growers of citrus fruits, especially famous in Sicily, were able to capitalize on that. But they also needed the protection of mafia-like apparatus to make sure that they could farm unmolested by brigands and other people who might come and scoop up their fruit while they were not able to manage the hundreds or even thousands of hectares of land under plant. So what happened?
And brigands were like these roving bands of bandits that local authorities couldn't provide protection from.
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad that you point that out because it's also something that crops up specifically in the absence of state, right? And that's sort of like the simplest definition of mafia in a kind of general sense, which is to say an extra state unit of power that provides the things that the state should, but is either not able, not willing, or too weak to provide. So the mafia in Sicily at this time began to grow. And of course, anybody who knows their Italian history won't be surprised to hear the years that we're talking about, because 1850s, 60s, 70s, and a little beyond, we're talking about a moment in which Italy is trying to unite and flush out foreign powers, or at this point, sort of mixed Italian / foreign powers, but having a kind of limited success, particularly in places in the South where there has been a long standing system of mezzadria, or a kind of feudal agricultural system. And as a result, what happens in this shifting balance of power where vacuums appear? Well, of course, mafia fills the void.
That's right.
So that, how do we parlay that into New Jersey wise guys smoking cigars and eating sauce with Bourjol?
Well, I mean, another consequence of the, you know, unification, a lack of stability that comes with it, especially in the South, the breaking up of noble lands, which led to widespread famine of the farmers who once depended on those lands, leads to a mass immigration, mainly to the United States, but not exclusively, significantly to the New York, New Jersey, tri-state area, Connecticut. And so you have this sort of depletion of population in South Italy that is transferred to the East Coast of the United States. To be fair, a lot of people who were fleeing were also fleeing the oppressive nature of the mafia, but there were some people who were either sympathetic to the mafias of the old world, or who were already sort of complicit in that style of business, that thrive and continue to conduct their business to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly not uninterrupted, but with a clear connection to a Campania or Sicily-based mafia network.
Yeah, exactly. And all of these, now this kind of spidering out of the web of mafia, we usually associate with the kinds of vice economies that we especially see dramatized in film and television, like, for example, sanitation work, gambling, prostitution or human trafficking, drugs, etc. But food ends up being a big player here, and not because the mafia thinks it's cute or homey or traditional, but because, like all of the other products that they attempt to monopolize, they see a lot of potential for profit, and in fact, especially for super profit, which is to say for margins that exceed the market expectation.
Yeah, I mean, Rome-based watchdog, the Observatory on Crime in Agriculture and Food Chain, quotes, you know, just recent earnings as being in the billions of euros for various mafia organizations in different sectors of the food world, whether that's, you know, leveraging the made in Italy or some sort of DOP in order to sell falsified food, or just like the theft of farm subsidies. There's a lot of money to be made. And, you know, the mafia operates in virtually every, if not every, potential profit-driven sector on the planet. So food, which is a very profitable business in Italy, should be no different. Of course, it's an appealing industry to infiltrate.
Yeah. Exactly, absolutely. And that's the probably, I think the last one that you mentioned is the one that is the least intuitive for, particularly for Americans coming at Italian products, and yet the most potential for profit and the most likely one for you to encounter directly. And by that I mean the purposeful usurping or undermining of Made in Italy, capital M, capital II, or the DOP, DOC, et cetera, designations that are meant to emphasize and protect, emphasize quality and protect consumers from the poverty or infiltration of less excellence in products, but that in fact the mafia uses to veil the selling of impoverished or purposely, and in fact, more often this, purposely fraudulent products, right?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the most famous occurrences was the falsification of mozzarella di bufala di Campania, DOP, the buffalo mozzarella from Campania that's meant to be made in a delimited zone with a finite number of ingredients, but was often, you know, diluted with even toxins and certainly made with milks that were not exclusively from Campanian buffaloes.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, mozzarella is an excellent example that you bring up, because it's one of the examples that also operates for us on all of the levels of potential mafia involvement, right? As you said, so the dioxin poisoning that was, or I should say the presence of dioxin that could lead to poisoning, that was found in the fresh mozzarella being made in Campania was a result of the dumping of toxic waste in a variety of illegal ways, including places that were not designated for it, in ways that were consciously unsafe and negligent, frequently blocking or invading agricultural territory that belonged to people who, individuals who were not capable of fighting against this massive machine.
Absolutely.
But then, of course, as you pointed out, there are all of these other things that come as a fallout, and particularly the product itself, by virtue of them being associated with dioxin, well, we know what happens. Who's going to buy mozzarella if they find out that it might be laced with toxic poison? So,
I mean, yeah, just
I mean, we're adventurous eaters, but like
yeah, I mean, I'm down for a lot. Yeah. Like, I'll eat almost anything, but I try to steer clear of dioxin laced cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
But how do you even know if things are toxic or not, if the production and distribution levels are contaminated? And I mean, we still have this huge privilege of in Italy of being able to visit food producers and seeing the land where things are made and talking to the people who are working for the business owners. It's a luxury, you know, in most parts of the world. And in Italy, it's becoming, you know, increasingly rare, particularly as Made in Italy and DOP, which I would argue are a form of their own mafias, being connected to those labels is something that producers have to invest money in. And of course, where there's the interest in investing money, there's a potential for diluting the very product in order to produce more of it, which is more profitable. Basically, you can't eat any food, everything will kill you, and your money's probably going to line the pockets of dangerous people, which is only, I'm only being slightly hyperbolic.
Exactly.
So, you know, like, but honestly, how can you avoid doing things like this? And I haven't found a real key. Although I do find, like, when I'm traveling in Italy, when I'm at home in Rome, or when I'm in the United States, I do sort of trust certain people to vet the sources of their food. I often travel to Campania and visit not just the Vanulo mozzarella farm, but other mozzarella producers. I as much as I can, eat food that is produced with the shortest supply chain
mm-hmm.
possible, which is not as easy as you might think in Italy because of the various agricultural and commercial requirements imposed on food producers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can, I grow my own stuff. But again, like that's utter luxury. If you're in the US though, I would say there's certain food purveyors, I should say, that know the source of the food, that are only stocking the things that they can certify are not just made in a clean way, mm-hmm. but also made by non-mafia affiliated hands. So like Gustiamo, for example, which has a Bronx-based
mm-hmm.
Warehouse and does mail order. But these are exclusive products. They're really, really expensive. So, you know, one of the many unfortunate drawbacks is that when food is produced in a way that is ethical, it is more expensive and therefore less accessible.
Yes. Yes. You're right. And there's no sugarcoating that, to use another, this is a very pun laced episode as well, I think, but in any case, there are a few ways you can do it, as you've pointed out, that usually imply spending a little bit more money and definitely spending more of your time, right? So
yeah.
Research ends up being necessary. And to be clear, I both consciously and unconsciously participate in mafia-related food activities in Italy all the time. I know that there are places that I go when I am, and by the way, not just in the South, because don't forget that the North is the money launderer extraordinaire for these Southern operations, particularly in and around Milan. But beyond that as well, and of course, the North also has its own smaller and less well-known mafias, but that doesn't make them any less problematic or successful in their more circumscribed regional spaces. But there are definitely places that I go to, that I've patronized, that I've bought things from, where I know that realistically, it would be impossible for this person, this either retailer or producer, distributor, to have given me the food that I'm eating or using to prepare for myself at home without mafia involvement in some ways. In particular, I feel like in and around the eastern coast of Calabria, which is a beautiful and interesting and difficult place, I rarely feel confident that there has been no modification of the process by mafia, whether mini or mega.
I mean, let's face it, produce in all over Italy, which comes, a lot of it comes from the South and makes its way north and is distributed, is incredibly affordable. I mean, and simply put, the cost of labor is eliminated by enslaving people to harvest produce.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, like that's sort of like a simple way of putting it, but like everyone who buys an orange in Italy should ask, why is it so cheap? Particularly if you know the origins are in Southern Calabria.
Right. Yes, exactly. There are a handful of ways to, at least while being conscious of participating in this or facilitating in some small way these mafia activities, to at least counterbalance, though, as you said. And one is, of course, at least being conscious and maybe spending a little more money or seeking out good distributor or purveyors or retailers. But there are also, I think, some ways that people are maybe a little bit less aware of that would be a kind of easy possibility, which is to just look for businesses, especially when you're traveling in the South, like in Sicily, where they have, you may see a restaurant or kiosk or stand selling food that puts the No Pizzo sticker in their window, revealing that they're part of a community effort to refuse to pay protection money.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few other options like that, right? I don't know, Katie, what are you hot on right now? Anybody doing anything especially useful, you think?
I mean, the best known, the one, you know, mm-hmm. the organization that people will come into contact the most is Libera Terra.
Mm-hmm.
And If I'm not mistaken, they both produce things on land confiscated by the mafia, as well as sort of actively develop businesses for people who want to be included in sort of new agribusiness on those confiscated lands. But Liberatera has, you know, stickers all over the place, and they definitely have, like, you'll see their logo on wine labels in Sicily all over.
Yeah. In fact, I think Centopassi, which is one of the larger scale operations under the Liberatera masthead, is available at least for online order in the U.S. I'm not sure if you'll see it at your local wine shop, but you could probably ask for it. And some of the products that they have, wine and other, are really very good, in addition to allowing you to feel a little bit like you've done your small part that day while you get drunk and eat cheese. So,
I mean, that feels like a great happy medium. Yes.
Well, I feel like we should at least and conclude with a little bit of sunshine by saying that there have been leaps and strides made. Liberatera isn't the only example, but as you've said, Katie, you talk to people, you hear from them, you know that there are watchdog associations in Rome and beyond. And by just putting a little effort in, people can become aware themselves and also in both directly and indirectly support these operations of people who are trying to make it at least not so easy for mafias to conquer and especially to kind of verticalize their food or agricultural operations.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is mafias are not going anywhere. They're going to continue to expand. I was supposed to go on a happier note. I forget.
Yeah, sorry.
but the more people talk about it, the more visibility people give to the reality of mafia and infiltration of the food system, the more you can be aware. And like, unfortunately, we live in like a consumer culture, and you exercise your voice with your money.
Yeah.
So spend maybe a little more if you can on places that can certify that they're not enslaving people to produce food or not paying a kickback. Although that, of course, has its own dire consequences.
Yeah, I feel like we keep crescendoing and then really crashing.
Yeah, sorry guys. Like, this is a really bad, sad topic. It's a great topic, but it's a sad one. And yeah, just like know where your food comes from if you can. That would be cool. And let's do 50 more episodes on this.
Yeah, yeah. Now I feel like I can just think of so many things that I want to talk about. Olive oil is a really good one too for this. So much fraudulent olive oil out there. So much. God, the San Marzano tomatoes themselves. I mean, it's really.
Be a skeptical consumer of Italian products, just as you might be anywhere else. I mean, made in Italy also is not shorthand for quality. There are lots of people that are ready to leverage that as some sort of seal of approval. And get to know the people that make your food if you can. Learn Italian, move to Italy. Spend all of your time researching food. It's that simple.
Well, and also it would mean that you could possibly become part of our podcast world. So if that sounds appealing, all you need to do is spend the next 15 years doing what Katie and I have been doing.
Yeah.
And you too could someday have your own podcast and put your money where your mouth is, or at least where our mouths are, by supporting Gola and other entities in our food and Italy podcasting world.
Yeah, we've got some new supporters.
Yeah, we actually missed somebody almost 2 months ago. It slipped through the cracks. So we are late and belatedly delighted to thank Ashley Opalka, who started supporting us on a monthly basis way back before our December break, and so we thank her profusely.
Thanks.
Alongside my friend Amanda Glubizzi, who, in the greatest compliment that I think we have yet received, informed me that not only is she supporting us with her wallet, but also with her ears by listening while she nurses her newborn daughter, Angelina. So congratulations and thank you for being by our sides virtually as you are with your new daughter.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Never too young.
That's what I said. Just put those little headphones on and explain to her that while the mafia is not going anywhere, she too can fight the good fight.
And on that note, thanks for listening. You can support us at golapodcast.com. Did I get that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And follow us on social media at Dr. Caligari's Cabinet and at Katie Parla. And thanks for listening.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.